Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Art Gishwind. He's previously a private banker for 12 years with JP Morgan Chase, but now Art is the owner of Q&A Logistics and Indoor Vegan. Thanks for joining us today, Art.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, super excited to have you. We're going to be talking a lot about, obviously, your story, story about not just your background, but also your family. It's going to be cool. But also, you know, talking about soil to oil, which I think is something that we really miss a lot. You know, we talk about soil to shelf, you know, soil to oil straight in, you know, because there's so many middlemen and different barriers that really affect the industry. So we're going to talk about how we can, move past that and how you're helping move past that in Q&A and give value for everybody.
Absolutely.
So appreciate that. Cool, man. But yeah. I guess let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
Sure. I'm currently in Aurora, Colorado, originally from Long Island, New York. Cool. I went to school out in Pennsylvania, lived in Virginia for about 5 years, headed back to New York for 10 years, and realized life didn't have to revolve around that hustle and bustle. And so I got out of there, and now I'm staying in Colorado. I think I'm here to stay.
Dude, what a different vibe, right? I mean, for, like you said, like the hustle and bustle of New York. I mean, I'm an LA guy, you know, I'm Cali boy. So, I mean, we have a whole different vibe, chill, you know, and my fiance, you know, soon to be wife is, she's from New York, and I spend a lot of time in New York as well, but it's such a different vibe, which for me isn't that appealing, but you know, you were in the finance, right? So that's the epicenter for that, you know,
absolutely.
And it's a whole different world, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, in one sense, I'm glad I grew up there, you know, cause the speed that everyone moves at and the pace, and you just get this kind of worldliness about you, where your eyes are open. You literally can't travel through your day with blinders on because there's so much around. Mm. But I've kindly nicknamed it Hypertension Central. it's just a lot to, you know, and New Yorkers get a bad rap. They're like, oh, you guys are mean and all this. And, you know, if you sit down with us one-on-one, everyone's just a person, just a regular person. Yeah. But on the average every day, it's like, how you doing? Don't answer that. Don't you have somewhere to be? I got to go.
Yeah.
So I spend enough time away.
A lot of characters in New York, you know, it's just,
it's the melting pot, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Hypertension Central. That's funny. I haven't heard it like that. You know, I chuckle, you know, but it is like that. And you mentioned a good point, right? Like, I'm so used, like you're saying, it's a great place to be from, right? It's a great place to grow up in, because it does kind of set you up for that way and for the business world and to have a different outlook, right? That people do need, you know, especially as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, you know, to have that, you know, kind of hustle, you know, talking about bad negative connotations, you know, the word hustle's even had a bad connotation nowadays, you know, but to really have that, you know, to have that kind of moving pace. And like you said, it can't always be sustainable because, you know, our blood pressure definitely notices.
But, it is. It's a lot. It's a lot.
So talk about that transition then. You know, I want to hear about your story, you know, coming from the finance world. How'd you end up here with Q&A Logistics? You know, walk me through the whole thing. Not just that, just your history with cannabis in general and how you got here.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think a lot of points of the story will resonate with anyone that's in the cannabis industry or you know, people that partake. Is started smoking at a young age. You know, you're in high school, you have your group of friends, people are bringing in new music and new sports. And then, you know, someone shows up with a dime bag, right? Mm-hmm. Going back in the day,
$40 dime bag.
Yeah, man. Yep. Dub sacks and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we're doing the gorilla smoking back in the day. You know, you dent up a soda can, poke some holes in it, and that was your first pipe.
Yeah. You know, mine was an apple. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
You gotta give a nod to Half Baked and one of the Baldwin brothers. Give me an ice pick, a snorkel, and an avocado. Yeah. Like we really did that stuff.
So,
started off like that just for fun. Didn't know what we were doing or getting into. It was just enjoyable with your buds, and so I. you know, enjoyed that, kept it going for a little while. And then this is actually a kind of one of the poignant parts of my story that happened right away is winter rolls around, right? And so, you know, we're outside smoking, everything, it's cold out. So, and it's really interesting how it happened at my best friend's, his mom and my dad, in separate occasions, the same thing happened. So we're up in the bedroom smoking and we're like, oh, let's open the window, right? And you try and blow it out the window. It's cold out. All the cold air is just coming back in, blows it through the house. Next thing you know, his mom's knocking on the door. What are you guys doing? Nothing, playing video games. I know you're smoking weed in there. We're like, okay, busted. Here's the cool part of that is she didn't read us the riot act. She was like, listen, I know you're smoking weed. You're not going to stop. Nothing that I'm going to tell you to do is going to make you stop that. But do it here. Do it at home. Be in a safe environment. Don't run around out there getting caught by the cops. And the same thing happened with my dad. Now, he was raised where weed was the devil, you know, back in the what was that movie back in
the Reefer Madness days?
Reefer Madness, yeah. So that was his parents, very A-type, old school. And so it was the devil back then. But he was a smoker through his whole life. And we got the same thing from him. Stay at home, be safe, enjoy it here. You know, you can have dinner, I'll buy you Doritos, whatever. But the best part of that was he didn't really even talk about the weed. He talked about what can happen around it. So it normalized it for me at an early age to where it wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't taboo. And, you know, you see that with alcohol, and let's not get too much into that, but here in the States, when you turn 21, kids are doing 21 shots and going into the hospital.
Yeah.
In Europe, you know, a 14, 15 year old might have a small glass of wine with their family at dinner. So it's normalized, and it's, you know, so I never really had that hardcore introduction where I was hiding it, running around and all of that. So it was really cool at a young age that, you know, we had parents that understood it for what it was, and it wasn't a gateway to heroin or anything. So it was pretty neat.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, I think the stigma adds to it, right? It adds that like naughty factor, you know, and like you said, you know, people who have been sheltered, hadn't been exposed, you know, they go right to, you know, hard drinking and over drinking and the same thing, you know, with bud, you know, so, I definitely agree. You know, I think adding that stigma, you know, it pushes people in the wrong direction where it's, I think people mean well, I guess, you know, right. And they themselves have their own stigma and they themselves have their own, you know, they're probably ignorant on a lot of the facts, obviously. Mm-hmm. But in the end of the day, it's just only causing more harm.
So it was pretty cool early on. That now as an adult and in retrospect, you know, I don't have any kids, but if I did, that's how I would do it too. Because once you take something out of normal discourse and okay to talk about and make it weird or evil or bad, then it can become a whole broad range of, you know, deviant things. So it was normalized for me and that stuck with me till this day. So yeah, just smoking, and that was really cool. Had a safe place at home. And, another big part of my whole story is I grew up in the garden with my mom and my grandma. They had their own food gardens.
Oh, nice.
So I got to get my hands dirty and see, like, you can actually grow vegetables from seed and have a product and produce and all that.
What?
Yeah. I'm like, well, hey, so like, this is pretty cool. So I kind of grew up, you know, I can grow a plant with the lights off is what I like to joke around about. Uh-huh. And so I'm sitting in my little basement. I got this bag of weed and I see all these seeds now. I'm like, oh, I know what to do with these. So I stuck them in a potter upstairs, and they grew like 6 feet high, pencil thin. There was spider mite webs all over them, and it never went anywhere, but it ticked something off in my head where I was like, hey, you know what? I can grow this myself too. Mm-hmm. So now I'm in high school, right? And this is a funny story is I went to a military high school, a Christian military high school. So very straight edge, and it was like a global learning community. So we had kids from Switzerland, Korea, you know, South America, all over the world, and they lived there. So they were there all day, all night for months on end. I was a day student, so I got to come and go. Now, what do you think that's ripe for? You have kids cooped up day and night in this school, nothing to do. I get to go home and come back. Mm-hmm. I heard you say in another podcast, you were a purveyor of sorts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, I was in the traditional market. You know, people ask, oh, you've been around in the industry for 15 years. What are you doing? You're like, well, uh-huh. We used to take trips up to Humboldt and come back. And, you know, uh-huh. that was basically what we would do, you know, and help people out.
Yeah, did your thing. So I had a high school where I had kids cooped up, you know, hundreds of kids cooped up all day and all night. So I was able to go out. I had a nice little economy going there. So I was, you know, a couple of years that was going on. So I was kind of like the MJ guy, you know. Uh-huh. And I'm sure there's plenty of people that did things like that. And then they went off and did other things with their life and forgot about it. But it internalized it for me. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's always going to be part of me. And I think it started off there. And then after that, get to college. And here's another light bulb moment for me, where prior to that, I was just, you know, smoking in the basement, enjoying it, doing my little thing. I get to college in 97, right? And now we all get a laptop. And so, you know, Windows 95 is out, the internet's kind of getting matured. And I pop this thing on, of course, one of the first things I look up is cannabis. And now I'm seeing, you know, High Times magazine. I'm seeing, you know, at that time, being 18 years old, I'm seeing adults and, you know, the world at large loving and enjoying cannabis in general. And then I'm seeing like normal, I'm seeing legal battles, you know, fighting for the rights and legalization. And it just opened my mind to, this isn't just my little thing in my dad's basement, you know, playing video games anymore. This is a really viable thing. And other people love it as much as I do.
Yeah.
Really opened my eyes to the broader world and viability of cannabis. So during that time, I wasn't really doing much with it. But I saw that you can, you know, buy seeds from Holland, and I've got all these dreams about all this other stuff. And, but really the big piece was seeing the broader world at large that enjoyed and partook in it. And it was institutions and, you know, again, legal battles was like, holy crap, people are fighting for this.
Yeah, no, 100%, you know. Now, you know, there's still so much, we have so much more to go, but, you know, I'm so grateful for that. You know, I'm so grateful for that. Well, I'm just sitting there blazing and, doing in my little corner of the world and doing that, you know, there, like you said, there was so much more going on and, you know, been medically legal in California since 96 and, you know, but so much progress has been made and a few steps backward, you know, and more steps forward and everything like that. But I definitely agree, you know, and we still have a long way to go, like I said, but I'm so grateful for those people that have been there, pushing the envelope, and doing things, you know, helping to do things when it was so stigmatized, right? It's not like, you know, we still have stigma now, obviously, but back then it was just you're a pothead. That's it. You know,
right.
You know, there's no two ways about it. It's like, you're a pothead. Why don't you grow out of this, you know, grow up.
Right.
You know,
exactly. Exactly. So it took it from me thinking the only thing cannabis was good for was, you know, being a pothead. And, you know, I got called a long-haired hippie for the longest time. It really woke me up to a larger structure for cannabis and changed the way I thought about it. So graduated college, moved to Virginia for a while, kind of just did my thing down there right after college, got crappy jobs and all that. Then I moved back up to New York in 05. That's when I started working for the bank. And, you know, at that point, again, weed was still part of me, part of what I did. You know, I was into the culture, the music, all that stuff. So it just always stuck with me. But I was trying to build this career in bank. It was a really good job. So I said, let me do that. But I was in bands, you know, for years, play guitar and stuff in bands. And, you know, weed is always around. It's always in the circles I traveled. So it was never not on my mind, I guess. Just like if anyone loves anything, if you talk to them for long enough, what they enjoy or think about is going to come up. So it was always there. And then fast forward to 2011, I don't know why, but I just started a grow in my attic, a little small grow. It was like a 4x4 tent just for fun. And actually I don't even smoke myself these days. When I moved down to Virginia, I didn't know where to find it and I wasn't going to walk down the street looking for it. So I just stopped. I've tried again after that cause I really enjoyed it, but I think it's just too damn strong and it just knocks me for a loop. So I said, hey, leave it for other people, more for you.
Yeah.
So I started this grow for
there's other aspects of the plant now too, you know, so it's not just about, you know, getting faded and everything anymore, you know, it's,
Yeah, there's much more to it.
Sometimes the other cannabinoids we realize later on, we're like, this is actually what I was looking for. This is actually what my body was craving for, you know, and obviously
yeah.
good side effect, you know, but.
Yeah, like the CBNs and CBCs. And, CBG especially. We're working on strains right now that are crossing CBD and CBG. So you're going to get about 10% of each.
Wow.
So, you know, that entourage effect from the cannabinoids. Uh-huh. I'll smoke hemp pre-rolls, CBG pre-rolls and stuff like that. They mellow you out. So yeah, there's a lot more to it these days, which is awesome. We still haven't discovered all the cannabinoids anyway. They're still out there. But so I start this grow in my attic and I ended up just donating it to friends. People would come over, be like, oh, let's get some weed. I'm like, here you go. You know, people have beers at their house. I did that as well. And next thing you know, I've got close friends of mine. Hey man, can you help me grow in my house? Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it goes back to the gardening thing with my mom. I'm like, yeah, grow whatever you want. So I found a good supplier company out in California, really good guys. And so I start buying frequently from them. And so I kind of got a reputation with them. They're like, who's this guy buying, you know, setups every couple of weeks and more nutrients and more light bulbs and all this stuff. And it kind of led me to a separate business endeavor down a different channel, but still along the same vein. As we're having beers one night, it was late in the season, like September, October, my friend's cousin owned a restaurant and he starts complaining about all the produce that's out of season. It's so expensive. I can't get it. I said, grow it yourself, man. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, what do you mean? What do I mean? Grow it. Had a room in the back. And so it wasn't really my project. I didn't head it. I really supplied the equipment for it and gave them tips. But next thing you know, they're growing trays of microgreens, you know, weird peppers and all this stuff.
Oh.
And it was really, really neat to be involved with. They ended up with like four or five restaurants. But the big takeaway for me was now I got to experience all this different kinds of equipment and how it all worked and really got my mind wrapped around like indoor grows. And at the same time, a side effect of that was building my reputation with this supplier that I didn't even know was happening. And so next thing you know, boom, November 6, 2012, Amendment 64 in Colorado, right? Now people can grow at home, which I was like, holy cow. I had friends out in Colorado, so it was on my mind. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. So right at the end of 2012, so all of 2013, I'm thinking, wow, that's really nuts. Like what I've been thinking about my whole life is actually finally coming to fruition. And then, bang, first day of 2014, rec sales in Colorado. And I just thought, I got to do something about this right now. I got to do something. Because I'm still working at the bank. I'm dealing with high net worth individuals, business owners. And I'm like, I should be on the other side of this desk. I should be the business owner making moves and things. So I got a drop shipping deal with that distributor. So now I had access to really good equipment for cheap. And then popped open Indoor Vegan. My indoor grow supply company. So that was 2014. 2015, I moved to Colorado. So you can see this evolution kind of happening and percolating the whole time. And so still working for the bank, not able to give my company as much love as it should have had to be even more successful. But I stayed active, kept going. And that's when I met Quentin, my current business partner now. And that's where the story really kicks in is, I think it was on Facebook and he put out, and we still sell this. It's a microbial inoculation for soils to create living soil, living water, and just turbocharge and create that living biome in your soil. Because plants, as most people should know, they're like an iceberg. The plant, the tip is growing above the ground, but the real work is done in the soil. And so I see this product and I hit him up. I said, let me carry that on my online store. So we start having conversations and we both have similar drives, similar paths, similar everything. And so kind of, it was like a match made in heaven. We just said, you know what, we have to start working together. So here's what I kind of talked before we started. I was telling you about a cool story I had. So before Q&A Logistics was born, we went in on some other endeavors, and one of them was called Cool Rip Bong Koozies. Okay. So
Bong Koozies, nice.
Bong Koozies. Now you can go on like Etsy and there people are doing like cross stitch and knitting like bong clothing or whatever you want to call it, accessories. But this was actually a wetsuit quality neoprene that you put over the stem, keep the ice chamber cold, no condensation, making a ring on your table. It's not slippery. Really, really cool deal. And so we're like, all right, you know, we knew the guy personally. So we're like, let's distribute this thing and try and move it out here. And so this gentleman, Thad Butler's wife, is involved in the music industry. And lo and behold, they got a hold of Be Real of Cypress Hill.
Nice.
So they made a custom Be Real bong koozie with the Dr. Green Thumb logo on it. It was all fully licensed and everything. And so they were selling their other ones, and maybe the profit wasn't enough or it wasn't selling and they wanted to discontinue the line. I said, no, you're not. I said, that's Be Real. You're crazy. If you're going to a bong koozie licensed by him and you're going to discontinue, I said, that's mine. Make it my baby. Let me run with it. So they did. So next thing you know, Cypress Hill comes to town in Denver. My crazy ass runs up in there. I'm knocking on the door. Their tour manager, Kenji, comes out. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I have these things. They're licensed by Be Real. Here's my card. And I just put them in his hand. I said, take them back there. So next thing you know, he comes back out. He's like, all right, come back after the show to go talk to B by the bus. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, go talk to B after. He's cool. He, you know, I know Thad. Like, Kenji knew this guy that we got him from. Boogie out behind the thing, and B-Real comes out with his, like, you know, headdress on, like the turban thing. I don't know the right word. But comes out with his headgear on. I'm like, holy shit. So I show it to him, and he's like, man, this is an old logo. We got to get you a new logo. I'm like, okay. So we've been in talks ever since. You know, it wasn't super viable because it only came in one size. And as you know, bongs are crazy, different sizes and all that stuff. So we're revamping it and re-releasing it. But I got to link up with B-Real of Cypress Hill over that, which is a pretty neat experience. I know you said you work with some artists too as well.
Yeah, right? Man. I mean, that's dope, dude. You know, I mean, and I'll talk about myself too for sure. But he hadn't seen it before. Like, he licensed it and, you know, probably.
He had seen it way early on.
Signed it somewhere else, but maybe it wasn't, you know, so much licensing deals going on. I'm sure it's like cards to keep track of it.
No, I think it was just kind of a little side thing he was doing because Be Real TV was just getting kicked off at that time. And so he was super busy on a bunch of projects. And I guess he just got approached with this one off. And he was like, yeah, go for it. Just send me $5 for everyone you sell. It was kind of just a thing. I showed it to him. He was like, holy shit, man. He's like, these things are still around? I was like, yeah. Like, yeah. Still doing them.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely, you know, and that was, you know, when we first got on, I saw that you had the Wu-Tang mug, you know, and I was like, dude, that's dope, man, you know, so this is how we grew up, right, you know, and, you know, Wu-Tang, one of my favorites, you know, Bone Thugs, one of my favorites growing up, so I was like, you know, right now we're working with Crazy Bone, you know, helping him with the social media with Leaves of Legends, shout out to Leaves of Legends, and
nice, that's awesome.
Ben and Mike, the whole crew over there. And you know, helping them with the marketing and with their presence and social media and everything like that. So you know, that was like another dream come true, you know, kind of thing. It's like, you know, you grow up listening to these dudes, and you know, this is like the main thing, right? You smoke bud, talking about, you know, these, you know, growing up and you know, just chilling in the car, hotboxing the car, right, and listening to Bone Thugs and Harmony, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's like surreal now getting to work with them. And the same thing, dude, Be Real, you know, but these are just dope cats, you know, that's why they've been in this. We talk about people who are leading the way, you know, these dudes been leading the way for a long time, and they, you know, big advocates, obviously, and bringing awareness to it, you know, for a long time, you know, so you know, it's our job now to keep that going, you know, but that's
right, awesome. Yeah, to write the next chapters. Yeah. And I think that's the big thing about our community, and even from top to bottom, the biggest cats like Be Real all the way down to everybody, people that are, and again, on one of your other podcasts, someone was talking about when you get into the industry, it's about intention.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Why are you here? What are your intentions? So you just want to make money and hop out? What do you want to do? And I found the people that have longevity actually care about what they're doing. They care about the plan. They care about, you know, the community, and they're usually open to talk. You can walk up to almost anybody and just spark up a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, and that's a cool thing. You know, the industry is such a, it's such a funny place, you know, because on one hand we have so many dope people, like we're talking about, just cool people, cool guys and gals, and you know, people you just want to chill and smoke a blunt with and everything like that. Yeah. And then there's, you know, the other side of the industry, like you were saying, you know, the people who came in from the finance side, a lot of them, you know, and not all of them are bad, you know, but you know, it's that there are people who are just like automatically like, fuck this guy, you know, fuck this guy. You know, I tend to have a little bit softer approach, you know, if he shows he's an asshole, then it's fuck this guy, you know what I mean? But I have a no asshole policy, but you know, some people do get into it for the right reasons, but some people, they just don't, you know? And I think, you know, I've mentioned it before, you know, in recent episodes, you know, that COVID, as bad as it's been, and, you know, and, but those who weather the storm are going to be even better than they were before, because a lot of those dudes are not willing to put up with the shit that people who do love the plan are willing to put up with now, you know, to stick to it and keep it through. You know, a lot of those dudes are cashing out, you know, you know, so they're like, all right, fine, give me my chips, I'm done, you know. So
or they're getting cashed out, like there's myself and a lot of like-minded, we will push you out.
Exactly. And that's that. Exactly, a lot of dudes losing their positions, you know, and you know, can't say good riddance, you know. See you. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out, you know?
Well, yeah. And then you had the hemp blacklists coming online, you know, where people are actively sharing, you know, bad stories and bad players. And you're not going to be here for very long if you do. It's, you know, with a new industry like hemp and even an older one like cannabis, you know, we want good people here. Let everyone know if you're not.
Exactly. You know, like, talking about Be Real and Crazy Bone and Wu-Tang, you know, the great philosopher Snoop Dogg said everything comes out in the wash, you know, so it's it's going to come out one way or the other, you know, and that's what we're seeing now with social media. You know, people can't run and hide anymore, and they can't, you know, just switch up, you know, sectors and start somewhere else. You know, people are taking notice to all this stuff. So it's ruining people's reputations, you know, so.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Cool, man. So I know also, you know, had a you told me you had a quick story about your father and how cannabis saved his life, you know. So you brought him up earlier, you know, when he kind of set you down and said, hey, dude, you know, and talking about how his upbringing was, you know, kind of reefer madness and kind of like, you know, if you're going to do it, dude, around here. But talk to me about your dad and on the other side as well.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I actually just spoke to him this morning. And yeah, I just kind of rehashed it all out, and it's exactly what it sounds like. He used to drink too much, and it kind of caught up with him a little bit, and he ended up in the hospital with his pancreatitis stuff, and like really bad. And so he made it through that, came back out. Next thing you know, he meets, you know, a doctor, filling him up with prescriptions, right? He met with this doctor for less than an hour. Next thing you know, walking out of there with four prescriptions. And then, you know, those prescriptions have side effects, so they give you another one to deal with that side effect.
Doctor's like getting his bonuses, you know, he's getting his kickbacks.
Yeah, he is taking his trips. So they kind of worked a little bit, they calmed him down and stuff like that, but he ended up gaining, you know, he's, you know, my dad and I are like 5'10". He ended up being like 48-inch waist, like 280 pounds, like not huge guys. So he gained all this weight. He was miserable, you know, and never saw the doctor again, just endless refills. Like, what is that? So later on, he found out that doctor got shut down for like literally selling things and doing crazy stuff. So he's miserable. And one of his doctor friends, professional doctor friend, helped him wean him off of all that stuff. Basically really, really helped him out, saved his life in that regard. But after he got all those off all the pills, I think there was kind of a like a buildup in his body. So even though he was off those pills that were destroying him, it didn't leave him right. So he then started getting severe chronic anxiety attacks, like debilitating anxiety attacks. Like he had to pull over his car, like really, really bad stuff. And he didn't know what to do about it. He wanted to go back to a doctor to get more drugs. And then that cycle would start again. So he goes to the store one day to get batteries or something, runs into a friend he hadn't seen in like 20 years. The guy's like, oh my God, Art, how you been, man? Let's go out to my truck and smoke a joint. My dad hadn't smoked in a while, but he was like, well, fuck it. Let's do that. I haven't seen you in forever. Takes a couple puffs. My dad calls them pokes. Took a couple pokes. And, you know, felt all right and then took the rest of the joint home. And he hadn't smoked in ages. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, a couple days later, he starts getting one of these panic attacks. He's like, fuck. Let me light up that joint. Took a couple puffs off of it, calmed him right down. Wow. Just settled him all the way down. And, you know, it was like, again, debilitating anxiety. And it's more of a maintenance thing for him. He doesn't like to get, you know, totally ripped or, you know, out of his mind. It's just a matter of being normal again. It keeps him, you know, normal on an even keel. And the cool thing for me was, and this is kind of like an ancillary effect of it, if you will, is he went on vacation, didn't bring any with him, had an anxiety attack there. Real bad. Everyone's having fun and he's over there miserable, feeling like he's going to die. But knowing that the weed would, he didn't have any weed with him, but it would take the edge off and fix it, helped him beat that instance of anxiety. Cause he said, you know I can beat this. I don't have the weed on me. I'll be home soon. But I know that really helps. So this anxiety thing isn't, you know, he didn't let it control him anymore because he knew he had an out and that was cannabis for him. And, you know, it's almost like, I don't want to say like I got my dad back, but I don't think he would have been the same, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean,
so I got to see the medicinal part of it in my, I've known my, obviously my whole life, I know him down deep. So when he tells me this story, I know it's the truth. Medicine.
Oh yeah, definitely. And, you know, like you said, you know, coming from that place of stigma and, you know, from his upbringing and you know, obviously, you know, the drinking, you know, so it's, you know, you see how people are anti-cannabis, but, you know, but then, you know, drinking's fine, right? And just a social norm, right? So that's what people go to automatically, you know, and not even realizing that there's alternatives and anything like that. That's why, you know, talk about medicinal, recreational, it's, you know, it's a big passion topic. It's, right. You know, but it's just that it's a passion topic because, you know, there are, it's obviously medicinal and also recreational, you know, so, mm-hmm. You know, so,
absolutely.
It's kind of like, you know, whatever you need it for, you know, it doesn't take away. One doesn't take away from the other one, you know? But yeah, you know, first of all, sorry to hear that, you know, the initial thing, but I'm so happy to hear that and grateful that you shared that, you know, about how kind of able to turn his life around, you know, and right away, you know, going straight to the pills and, you know, mm-hmm. then the doctor's locked up. And unfortunately, a lot of time we hear these stories too often, right? We hear these stories about you know, the doctors who get locked up, you know, and we also hear so often about people who were anti-cannabis and then because of their own personal experiences said, holy shit, this is not what I ever thought it was, you know, mm-hmm. And gives people a new lease on life. You know, and, you know, at least it sounds like it was, you know, for your dad, it was before it was too late. You know, sometimes, unfortunately, you know, for some people, yeah. You know, they don't find out until it's kind of last on life. It's like, I could have had a better quality of life the last 10, 15, 20 years, you know, dealing with this. So now that's our job, you know, you yeah. know, talking about the, you know, going back to kind of the theme that we've had, you know, where people, you know, activists have been paving the road for us. Now it's our job to continue that, you know, continue to destigmatize and be able to educate people now that it is out there. Now that we have this opportunity, we don't have to fight as hard in terms of legislation. Obviously, it's still a long way to go. You know, it's not
a long way to go.
We're around the bush. But at the same time, there's a new battlefront that we can start that we're now starting to undertake, you know, so that's a good thing, man.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and how funny is it that the psychoactive family member of cannabis got legalized first? And now we have hemp and CBD.
That's it. That's it, and that's what we're talking about too. You know, there. You know, I smoke. I'll be honest. On Saturday, I had some edibles, and they knocked me on my ass, bro. I was like, took you know, more than I'm used to, and I was like. Went to the beach and just was like, you know, what can I say? No complaints, right? I mean, had a great time and passed out on the beach, you know, and until sunset, you know, so that was great. But yeah, same thing, you know, I don't, growing up smoking every single day, you know, from the time I was 15 until pretty much 30. And now, you know, I have it when I want, don't have it when I want, but CBD is a whole nother thing, you know, hemp products are a whole nother thing. That's kind of where I've kind of probably what I was looking for in, for a lot in the long run anyways. And it just has a whole different thing. And that's kind of your focus as well. And specifically, you know, with Q&A, the soil to oil, you know, and so, you know, I want to kind of shift gears and talk about that, you know, talk about Q&A and talk about, you know, the, some of the challenges that hemp farmers face these days, you know, and what, and also the end users and everybody in throughout the,
For sure. I mean, Q&A kind of came about, Quentin owns International Biosolutions, that large scale ag and farm support, and me being in the cannabis industry for so long, working on all these other things, hemp became legal. And so now you have large scale ag hemp, and then you have my cannabis experience. It was like a match made in heaven for hemp, you know? So that's kind of how Q&A was already in the works, but that's how we rushed and it was time to, you know, get that together. So, I mean, you know, it's the hemp industry is a new industry. It's a new quote unquote new industry only because it's become legalized again. But I hear, it kills me when I hear farmers saying, you know, we're just playing this by ear. We're just, you know, learning as we go. And I'm like, you know, it's cannabis sativa. Okay. Yeah. We just kind of swap the cannabinoids from THC to CB. It's the same thing. Everyone's been growing for 20 years. Why are you learning as you go? So that's one of the biggest challenges is people just get into it without planning. You know, from the get go.
Yeah. You see it all the time, and you know, from the bottom up, right? You know, no business plan. You know, no people want to do it. They see the money, right? They see the, the green rush kind of, you know, that
absolutely.
You know, and they see the money, and they just want to jump in any way. But they haven't, you know, they don't want to pay consultants, right? They don't want to pay people who've been doing it before. They don't want to pay for marketing. You know, we're going to learn how to do everything ourselves. Like, what kind of business? No business in any sector would do that. It's still a business.
Why would you do that?
It's the cannabis industry, right? You wouldn't do that anywhere. You're in finance for, you know, 12 years. You how many people did you see who had successful businesses? How many of them went in without a business plan, without paying consultants, without marketing plan?
Thank you.
It just doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense.
If I could record your last 30 seconds and play it before I talk to every farmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, I feel like cannabis in general has this mystique about it where people just don't follow, not necessarily the rules, but there's structure to be followed. It's business like no other.
And still SOPs, you know.
So you don't have to do, exactly. Magic three letters right there. You know, and there's plenty of knowables out there. Uh-huh. You know, like you said, you wouldn't start any other endeavor without researching first. So, you know, I sell farms before you buy a single seed or a start or even till your land. Do all of your research, right? Build your complete business plan around hemp. Plug in all the variables, you know, whether it's genetics or harvesting or whatever. I mean, there's people that didn't even think about harvesting. I mean, last year we had a gentleman grew two giant fields, and you can Google it. We get our first frost here in Colorado the first week of October. Clockwork. He's got a field, no plans on getting it up. And it's like October 3rd, we're getting a frost in 2 days. So Quentin and I mobilized 75 hands out to this field. And we've got a freaking, like an ant farm out there. We got everyone pulling and field bucking into super sacks. And I'm like, did you guys not just Google when the frost comes? it just blew my mind.
They're going to figure out as they go, you know? That's why most people can't make it past 1 year, you know? That's exactly it. They go and they gamble everything, and it sucks, you know, because you see people losing their ass and some people taking their own life, you know, as a result.
So yes.
Not something to laugh about, you know? But, you know, it's kind of, you know, from an outside perspective, there's a lot of red flags along the way, you know, if they just sought some advice somewhere along the way.
Yeah. And that's tough too, because you have all these people out there claiming they know stuff. So you really don't know if you're even getting a real, you know, industry expert. There's, you know, let's not even get into the brokers out there, you know, the opportunists that just jump in and say, I've got this and I've got that. And it's like three connections away anyway. But, you know, like when I had farmers say, do you know where to sell it? And they don't know anything. I'm going to say, well, the most important thing for you is an exit strategy, because it's going to blow up and you need to not, you know, risk your farm on it. But I mean, really build your business plan first, plug in your variables, don't go over your head. You know, if you have 40 acres, don't do 40 acres, do two. Learn the plant, you know, and how it stands now, you know, you get a couple thousand pounds. If it's decent smokable, you're going to be able to flip that. It's going to be a little cash crop for you. Yeah. You can see it. Like you said, there was that green gold rush, and I saw so many farmers were paying $5 a clone, $5 a seedling, because they saw the back end, all the money there, so they didn't watch their input costs.
Oh, my gosh.
And so now biomass drops, and their input costs are eight times as much as a pound of biomass, and because they didn't watch their front end because they were too glued on the promise of the scratch-off ticket.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, but we had a giant...
And that's if everything goes perfectly, right?
Right.
You know, you're talking about entering your variables. That's just everything is like, oh, this guy did it. You know, I can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like results vary, yeah. You know?
Right.
Like anything else.
Yeah, I mean, here in Colorado, you can get hail. It'll knock down your entire crop in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Or with hemp, it gets a little bit too hot, you know, and, you know, you're above the 0.3% and you see everything
that
flames before your eyes, you know, so.
Yep. Depending on your state, screwed. So, I mean, I usually just tell people, you know, just plan. You know, there's that old saying, you measure twice, cut once, right? So, I mean, you know, just find reputable places. And, you know, I hear people say, you know, what's reputable, you know, because there's two sides of the coin. Past performance could be an indicator of future success, but sometimes past performance is not an indicator, you know, and like, what's not? Like a movie sequel, right? First movie was awesome. It doesn't mean the second one's going to be good. Or like a sports player, great rookie year, off, you know, they suck next year. But if you look at certain businesses and that have SOPs in place, you know, seed genetics, the ability of farmers, your processors that put out quality smokable biomass last year, they have the same machines, the same people running them, they're probably going to do a good job, right, for the next year. I mean, you know, look for, and this is just advice, you know, if anyone's listening that's doing this, look for places that have open door and open book policies. I don't mean look at their profit and loss. I mean, what did they sell last year? Were they successful? What did their extract look like? You know, was it good or was it crazy and, you know, got people sick? A good example, my buddy Adrian Zelski over at High Grade Hemp Seeds here in Longmont, Colorado. Uh-huh. They've been around since 2011. I mean, hemp, you know, stellar genetics. They performed last year. They're doing
that's crazy. 2011 for hemp? That's
2011. Yes, sir. You know, absolutely. I mean, they've been doing, you know, legal research, you know, on it for a while. It wasn't, you know, legal to sell and grow in the broader market, but yeah, 2011 they've been doing it, and they're going to keep doing it. Same thing with my buddies up in Fort Lupton, BDM Genetics. They've been doing it. They've been farmers by trade. You know, visit their site, fly out. If you're serious about this, if you're serious about dumping $80,000, $120,000 on the next 3 months of your life into a project, fly out to the facility and meet them. Spend $600 for a plane ticket and a hotel. You know, that's, I live by that. Like right now, my partner Clinton's flying to Oregon to lock down this biomass thing. You have to do it. You have to, you know, be active, be involved, dive in. And, you know, so that's one of my biggest things for them is just do your due diligence. And, you know, there's ways to get around and navigate the industry to, you know, nothing's perfect, like you said, but there are knowables and there are things you can do to ensure that your process is complete, that's vertically integrated. And that's kind of what Q&A, that's our passion. That's our business model, that's our job, but that's our passion. I have a great example of that is a co-op out in Pennsylvania, Amish farmers, right? Farmers by trade, amazing products. They decided to do hemp the right way. 80 acres, they did two, okay? But they don't have access to the outside world. They can't Google things just by the nature of how they live. So I hop out there, and rather than let them limp along for 4 years and figure it out, I come out there and I take them right to the finish line. I'm like, do this right now, do all these things. And luckily the Amish are very disciplined. They actually listen, they do it. Where you have some, you know, certain farmers, like I've been doing cannabis for 20 years. I do what I want. I'm like,
well, yeah, okay,
you got to do that. Do that. See ya. But yeah, that's kind of what we do all the way, again, like you said, from soil to oil is, you know, seed to shelf, whatever it might be. is just trying to set people up with SOPs, whether it's we give it to them or we introduce someone else that's better at it than us. We don't care. We just want people to be successful. You don't think about the dollars at the end, because if you do the things the right way and help people, they'll help you back and that'll come.
Oh, I love that you said that, man. I love that you said that. And that goes back into the integrity that we're talking about, you know, coming in with the right intentions, because, you know, I talk to people all the time and, you know, I tell them straight up, I say, listen, man, you know, first of all, we're not the only show in town. You know, we're not the only, you know, we're not the only place that provides digital marketing and does great stuff for the industry and focus on the industry. You know, there's, I'm not here to poo-poo anybody else. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, everybody has their own thing, and you know, let everybody, there's plenty of room at the table, you know, for everybody. But I tell them, I said, whatever you do, make sure you get an expert. Make sure that you stick with somebody who's in the industry. You know what I mean? Like, don't just say, oh, cool, like, I need digital marketing, I'm going to go to this, you know, to this agency. Or
go to Fiverr.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, oh man, if they're going to that, then it's, you know, I don't want to work with them anyways. You know what I mean? You know, it's, they're on a whole nother place. Right. But, you know, in terms of, you know, there's vast amounts of great companies out there, but there's a lot of people who are doing great things outside of the industry, and people want to go to them. And I say, listen, there's so many compliance issues. There's so many things that you can get in trouble, you know, and it's not to sit here and scare you. It's just the reality. It's the fact of the matter, you know, where, you know, you can get shut down with your payment process. You can get shut down with their website. Mm-hmm. You know, you can throw money in the wrong direction, you know, really, really quick, you know, into a money pit. You know, so I say, whether or not you come with us or not, that's all cool. You know, I just want you to be successful. Just make sure you find somebody who's an expert in the cannabis industry. You know, just go with that and ask questions, you know, and give them some, and I give them some questions to ask, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm not scared of competition, and, you know, so I appreciate that you said that as well, you know, because it's like, you know, Q&A logistics, you know, you're doing great stuff, you know, but ultimately you want people to be successful, you know, one way or the other. You know, just make sure you invest in yourself. One way or the other, just invest in yourself. You know, don't go in here and, you know, go willy-nilly and say, oh, well, we'll figure it out as we go along. That's like, you know, a huge red flag right off the bat.
Yeah. You say invest in yourself. Let's be clear. That doesn't always mean money.
Yeah.
It can mean time, you know, research, just getting out there, being active in the industry that you want to partake in, you know. It's, you know, investment is more time than anything for me. But I mean, what we do is we really try and this sounds like a corny sales tagline, but I mean it 110%. If you're not successful, we're not successful either.
Yeah.
We don't exist without the farmers, straight up. The whole vertical supply chain goes away if the farmers aren't farming and putting out good quality product. So you got to keep in mind, you know, don't bite the hand that feeds you, or, you know, take care of that. And just, again, just do the right thing, the intentions, and why you're even here, you know. But again, the best thing I can do is say, do your due diligence, whether it's me or someone else, find someone that knows their stuff. you know, like a nuclear example of it, like we had a farmer out in Pahrump, Nevada, growing his field, did very well, looking really good. He had a farmer a couple miles away, didn't pull their males, pollinated his whole field. So now instead of growing CBD flower, he's growing seed.
Wow.
Visits his neighbor. He's like, what the hell, man? So at least tell me what genetics you used. Guy had no idea what genetics he used. No idea. It was just a mishmash. So this guy got pollinated from a grab bag of whatever. Here's the problem. This gentleman harvested all that seed and took it to market. He sold that seed, that unknown genetic cross. Who knows what pheno it was, or, and he sold it. He's like, I'm going to sell this seed. I was like, holy crap, dude. I was like, get away from me.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, you had farmers that probably bought from him. You know, nothing I can do about it. I would have loved to have stopped them. But so, yeah, just do your due diligence. You know, as far as the white labeling and, you know, again, if depending on where you want to go, know that niche, you know where you can sell it. Hey, I want to grow hemp. Do you know where to get rid of it? Because you grow corn, someone's going to pick that up and put it on the shelf. That's not CBD. Know where it's going to go. So, yeah, I think it's just do your due diligence, really. And, you know, just be active. Like you said, invest in yourself. And it doesn't always have to be money. It could be time spent. Just make contacts. Word of mouth is always the best contact. You know, if you go on Facebook, you say, hey, I need some seeds, you're going to have 10 brokers and maybe one real person respond.
Yeah. I'm definitely very advised, man. And, you know, obviously, you know, talking about Q&A and what you guys are doing and so many different people out there, and you kind of got to, you know, do your due diligence, obviously, right? And so I guess, you know, in terms of Q&A, what's been your biggest obstacle, you know, that your business has faced, you know, getting yourselves out there, anything else, and how you've been able to overcome it?
Sure. I think it just follows right along with kind of just piggybacking off the last conversation is meeting enough people, getting out there, staying active. And this can kind of transcend into almost any kind of any business or any industry is you have to take the time and meet people, make connections, talk about it, learn it for yourself. So, you know, when something crosses your desk, it's either good or bad and you don't waste all your time on that. You know, just kind of staying productive and avoiding the minutia of, you know, last year there were people that had, you know, purchase orders for 12 million pounds of biomass with this, you know, Photoshopped proof of garbage. Like that's nothing. It's not real. I think again, one of our biggest challenges is just finding there's a lot of gray area out there and a lot of weird players doing weird things for weird reasons. And I don't even care to know their reasons, but it was just super interesting and super telling to me that half of the brokers and half of the people that were selling seeds and extraction deals, as soon as PPE came, they jumped over there. And I'm like, what? You were just trying to sell me clones. Why are you selling rubber gloves and hand sanitizer now? Like,
yeah, exactly.
What kind of opportunistic weirdo shark are you?
Like, yeah.
Who built you?
Right away, dude. Right away. But it's cool, man. Get them out of here. You know, it's
yeah.
I love it. You know what I mean? I love it. You know, here for a cup of coffee. You know, the coffee's getting cold. You know, drink up and, you know.
Yeah. So I think that's our biggest challenge, and it is for everybody, is just navigating the gray area of all the crazy people out there. And again, because if I get mixed up with a bad broker or a bad extraction facility and I bring my customers to the table, now I look like an idiot.
Exactly, exactly.
And, you know, Quinn's my partner, so I pull a bad deal, he looks dumb too.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's that, you know, sense of responsibility to each other that makes sure that we operate above board and do the right thing across the board.
Yeah.
You know, we ensure each other's SOPs. I flew out to Pennsylvania and I kind of cut a deal and I didn't actually get an NDA first.
Huh.
So he's like, bro, what are you doing? What happened there? I was like, you know, you're right. So two sets of eyes are better than one. If you're lucky enough to have a business partner you can trust with your life. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And, you know, it just goes back to the relationships, you know, having the right relationships and, you know, so we're partnering up with the right people. We can make the right recommendations, you know, when somebody comes for me with something, you know, I'm grateful, able to know a lot of great people in this industry, you know, and a lot of that's due to this podcast as well, you know, so right away, you know, able, you know, and that goes into the due diligence as well, right? So, you know, being able to plug people in, that's a great thing, you know what I mean? And just being able to do that without, you know, without needing to broker a deal and,
right.
Everything else, you know, it's, you know, obviously, you know, using your opportunities for the good is great, but also, you know, sometimes you don't need to make money off of every single connection you make and all that fun stuff as well, you know, so.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess just something else I just want to touch on real quick is like anyone looking to get into the industry, I mean, you know, you heard my whole story and it took different random paths, but it was all still percolating there. All I can say is if you want to get into cannabis or you want to get into spare tires, it doesn't matter. Stay active. If you're passionate about it, it'll come out. You'll just live it. You know,
yeah.
If you talk to me for long enough, I talk to you, Maynard, for long enough, I guarantee half an hour, 45 minutes in, we're going to talk about your podcast. We're going to talk about your business. You know, it's just going to come out. So just stay active and look for those conversations and be open and listen for opportunities. A great example of this is my buddy he's here in Colorado and he went to the head shop or whatever to get a grinder or something, and he's into, let's just say, the magic fungus stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, magic mushrooms.
Hey, that's coming around too, baby. Sure. You know, the psychedelics, yeah. Man, it's also a you know, hopefully the, now those opportunistic people don't shift into that. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh.
You know,
hopefully they do and they take too much and they never come back.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. A lot of these dudes don't even smoke, but you know, they're, you know, posers, you know, but anyways,
yeah,
that's coming up too. You know, that's,
Yeah, well, just real quick, I'll get back to the point I was going to make is that's a huge challenge in this industry, cannabis and even hemp, is you'll find, you know, people that are just weed heads and they're like, well, I want to work and I want to own a business in cannabis. I'm like, dude, like, you shouldn't even own a pet, you know, and they're just high all the time. And I love them. Like, I'm not knocking anybody for doing anything, but you have that segment of people that just, they're over their heads. And like, I want everyone to strive for whatever you want to do. But that's been a big challenge. It's just the reliability because of, you know, you go to a brewery, not all those people are getting drunk and stuff.
Yeah.
But one thing is just funny because my buddy went to the store and he heard someone talking about the mushrooms for research purposes. It's like legal here in Denver and everything. And I'm like, yo, so you heard, he was talking about that. And he's like, yeah, he was like an expert, does it? I said, well, when are you taking him to lunch? He said, well, no, he was talking to someone else, so I just left. I was like, you did what? You didn't wait for him and then go pick his brain and make that connection and do all that thing? So that's the best thing I can tell you. There's a lot of stuff you can do to make yourself relevant in any industry, specifically with cannabis. Go to the expos. Go to the conventions.
Yeah.
Talk to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, stay relevant. A lot of it you can do for cheap. I mean, to be honest, right now, yourself and myself. You know, I started this business back in 2014, not knowing everything that would come from it. But if I didn't have this business and see Quentin's product on the website and say, hey, let me carry that product, as a business owner, I never would have been able to have that conversation with him. And you never would have reached out to me and said, hey, I'd like to have you on the podcast as, you know, a CEO over here. So doing certain things then allows you to travel into other circles.
Exactly.
Right? So you never, sometimes 1 + 1 = 3. Does that make sense?
No, 100%. It's beyond the sum of its parts, you know? It's 100%. And that's the whole thing, you know? Like I said, you know, it's the cannabis industry, but it's a cannabis community, you know? We all know each other and, you know, it's pretty small and, you know, word gets around quick for better or for worse, you know? And for better, it gets around quick too, you know? So it's, you know, it's so important to make the right relationships, to make a good impression and to own it, you know, especially in this kind of industry, because we talk about it as well, you know, kind of the negative side, you know, and we don't want to focus on that stuff, but, you know, talking to today, a buddy of mine who's also in the industry, and he's like, man, I get tired of the flakes. I get tired of, you know, people who, you know, the ego and all that kind of stuff. And you can spy that everywhere. I mean, you're in the finance world as well. So,
well, you said own it, you know, own the good things, but also own the bad things. If you screw up, freaking fix it.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
very good, man. All right. It's been great, dude. So, you know,
yes,
as we're wrapping up over here, you know, I listened to a few episodes already, so probably see this coming, but you know, how do you define success, whether it's professionally, personally, or existentially? It's my favorite question, you know, so what does success look like for you?
Wow. You know, I think it's a hard question for anyone to ask because I'm still finding it. You know what I mean? Some people look at me and say, wow, he's really successful. And, you know, maybe I don't see that. Or I think someone else might be and they don't see it either. I think it's just really being kind of just happy where you are and experiencing, you know, for me, again, taking it back to like a money thing. Money's not the goal. I mean, I'm not passionate about money. I don't care about that. What I'm passionate about is the journey there. Like I journey the hardship, the struggles, the work to get to where I'm going. So the payoff is in itself. So success to me is more of a mindset than a destination, if that makes sense.
No, 100%.
If I carry myself the right way and I can sleep at night knowing I did the right thing by people, even if I get screwed, you know what? I'll take 4 losses for the 1 win because the 1 win is going to be bigger than that. So I think success is just enjoying the journey, doing the right thing, being able to sleep at night, you know, and that could mean different things to different people. But for me, success is a journey rather than the destination.
Yeah, I think that's the whole thing. You know, I think people get caught up and we have to have goals, you know, and make them something that we can, that's palpable, that we can, you know, move us along and be happy about,
strive for,
you know, exactly, strive for. But, You know, I think you see it when people retire, right? When people retire and they start slowing down, you know, mentally, mentally, physically, you know, because they don't have that destination. They don't have, they're not on that journey. They think they've made it, right? So, okay, cool, I'm done, you know? And the people who are the healthiest are the ones who maybe they retire from one career and move into another career. You know, okay, cool, I don't have to do this anymore. That's awesome. Now I can do this, you know, but they keep it going and they keep their mind active. Because of that, you know, and that's what's so important is having, being on the journey, you know, being on the journey is always more important than the destination anyways. You know, you can, you see it, you know, playing Super Mario growing up, you know what I mean? It's like, what's, you know, playing the game is the best part. You know, you beat, Coop at the end, you know, and
then it's over,
then it's over, you know, then it's running back, you know, or onto another game, you know? So, it's, but it's all about the fun part is that journey.
It's getting there. And how about, how many times have you started on something that you were just gung-ho about and halfway through you changed your mind or the goal shifted, it pivoted over here. So now what you were working for over there isn't the same anymore. You didn't take a loss, or that's actually strength, is changing your mind in the middle of a journey. And so again, you know, your goal might change. So if you're always goal oriented, the goal changes, it might destroy your passion or whatever it might be. So The beauty is in the struggle.
Definitely. Well, I have ADHD, so, you know, I have to reel myself in sometimes from, you know, shiny object syndrome. I got to be like, man, stick to the script. You know what I mean? Like, you know, stick to the script. Let's, you know, we have this goal. Let's go reach this. Then we can start pivoting. And so, yeah, obviously, you know, have to be nimble and not, you know, in all ways. But definitely, you know, I definitely relate to what you're saying there for sure. Cool, man. Now, so as we close, how can our listeners find out more about you, Q&A Logistics, connect with you and reach out to you and work with you?
Sure. Well, we're on most of the major platforms. Facebook, we're up on there. Q&A Logistics. We're also on LinkedIn as well. You can hit our website. It's qa-logistics.com. I think you're probably going to put this in notes and everything, so. But yeah, we're out there. We're ready to rock, and we're out there. We're visible. Come say hi. If you have any questions, pick our brain. That's what we're here for. Again, if you listen to everything I said, just talk to me. I'm happy to share my knowledge and see if we can help you. And just do the right thing. Just do the right thing. Sleep at night. Help people, because it'll come back around 100%.
Isn't that amazing? And all that, like you mentioned, all those links will be here in the in the notes. So check out Art, hit him up, knows his stuff. So Art, I appreciate it, man. I really appreciate it. Appreciate your insight and your stories and just connecting with you. And thanks everybody for listening today. Thanks again, Art, and good luck to you in the rest of 2020 and beyond.
Thanks so much, likewise.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur, and you know you need an uptick in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's C-A-L-A-C-A-N-N.com. And follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.